Michael Saylor, writing in the Historical Journal, tells us that in 1920, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle published an article in the Strand magazine affirming his belief in the existence of fairies. Accompanying the article were several photographs of the alleged sprites taken by two young girls from Yorkshire in 1917, which had convinced Doyle of a discovery he termed epoch-making. The wonderful irony of this situation is that at the same time that Doyle was criticized for claiming that fairies were real, many of his readers were claiming that Sherlock Holmes was real. Indeed, Holmes was the first character in modern literature to be widely treated as if he were real and his creator fictitious. Since his appearance in the Strand magazine in 1891, many either believed Holmes existed, or at least claimed that they did, and the interwar period witnessed an outpouring of articles in prominent magazines and books from respectable publishers which treated Holmes and Watson as real individuals and that never mentioned Doyle. For example, scholarly biographies, in quotes, of both Holmes and Watson appeared in 1932, inspiring equally scholarly reviews and leading articles debating such fine points as which college Holmes attended or how many wives Watson had. Meanwhile, Nick Renison wrote a study he titled Sherlock Holmes, the Unauthorized Biography, and he sets the stage. The year is 1895. London is swathed in yellow fog as the greasy clouds swirl up the streets and condense in oily drops on window panes. Two men peer out from rented rooms at 221B Baker Street. One is tall and gaunt, with a narrow face, hawk-like nose, and high, intellectual brow. The other, shorter and stockier, is square-jawed and mustachioed. Outside, the smog envelops a vast city that holds a thousand sinister secrets, but inside is a haven of comfort and domesticity. Suddenly, out of the surrounding gloom, a handsome cab emerges. A young woman descends from it and looks up briefly at the two men at the window before ringing the doorbell of 221B. Another client with a tale of mystery and potential danger has come to consult Sherlock Holmes. The game is once again afoot, and Holmes and Dr. Watson will soon be in pursuit of the truth about another dark story from the hidden metropolis. Few individuals in English history are as well known as Sherlock Holmes. From the moment in 1887 when, in a narrative published in Beaton's Christmas Annual for that year, his colleague and friend Dr. John Watson revealed the detective's extraordinary powers of analysis and deduction, he captured the imagination of the public. As Watson continued to act as Holmes Boswell, recording more of his exploits and adventures in magazine articles and books, his fame spread. Watson's accounts have been translated into dozens of languages, from Afrikaans to Yiddish, from Armenian to Vietnamese, from Swahili to Slovak. There are various versions of the stories in Esperanto, in Pitman's shorthand, and of course in Braille. There is even a translation of the Dancing Men into the code that plays such a central role in that story. Like other emblematic figures from that nation's past, Henry VIII, Robin Hood, Winston Churchill, Holmes has been seized upon by the heritage industry. Pubs and hotels are named after him. Tours of Sherlock Holmes' London wind daily through the streets of the capital. Holmes' memorabilia crowd the shelves of gift shops and tourist boutiques. Should you feel so inclined, it is possible to buy silver statuettes of Holmes and Watson, Sherlock Holmes fridge magnets, and Hound of the Baskervilles coffee mugs, a 221B Baker Street board game, and a Sherlock Holmes plastic pipe designed to provide the authentic Holmes aura without actually encouraging smoking. There is even a Sherlock Holmes teddy bear dressed in an Inverness cape and deerstalker hat. There is a musical, Sherlock Holmes, the musical, by Leslie Bricusse, screenwriter of Dr. Dolittle, the movie. opened in 1989, and the musical closed almost immediately, and it's rarely been seen on the stage since. There's been a ballet called The Great Detective, produced at Sadler Wells in 1953, and at least one opera has required a tenor, Holmes, and a bass, Watson, to sing feelingly of their mutually rewarding partnership and the joys of detective work. Yet Holmes himself remains a curiously elusive figure. That from Sherlock Holmes, the unauthorized biography by Nick Renison. In Chapter 1, Renison takes us back to Holmes' origins in a village on the edge of the Yorkshire Moors, pointing out that there had been Holmeses living in that part of Yorkshire for centuries, as far back as 1219. And, as we know, the fascination with all things Sherlock continues, and we're invited to the summer production at the Pennsylvania Theater of Performing Arts in Hazleton that centers on the origin story of the Holmes-Watson partnership. It's an original play titled Sherlock Holmes and the Scarlet Avenger, adapted by Bill Amos from the story A Study in Scarlet. Playwright Bill Amos, director Cole Krusofsky, and Sherlock himself, Matt Bubble, stopped in at the WVIA studio before rehearsal to talk about the show. Bill Amos begins with some background.
I'm the playwright of the stage play Sherlock Holmes and the Scarlet Avenger, which was adapted from Arthur Conan Doyle's first Sherlock Holmes story, A Study in Scarlet, which basically tells us the story of how Holmes and Watson met and how they covered their first case together. And this is actually the second time this play is being staged. It was originally done in 2019 at Drama in Motion Performance Works at the Factory in Nuremberg, PA. And now we've brought it to PTPA because it's a fun show to do. I'm working on trying to get it published, and it requires multiple performances to get it published. And I wanted to see new life breathed into it by other people other than the usual suspect.
Have you been interested in writing plays for a while?
Generally, I've been interested in writing for a while. I've written a lot of short stories that nobody has ever read because they're not published. I just usually write for myself. And adapting stuff like this really was born from my interest in reading. I always had a hard time keeping up with stuff I was reading. So I thought, well, why don't I just try retyping it? And that'll kind of help me retain the book. And really the interest in adapting stuff and even the interest in writing kind of developed further from there. And I'm a huge, huge Sherlock Holmes fan. I've been since I was a kid. My grandmother has a lot of influence in that. She showed me a lot of the Basil Rathbone movies and stuff like that. And I got into watching Peter Cushing's and Jeremy Brett's adaptations on television. And so it really snowballed from there. And I thought, why not write a Sherlock Holmes play? I've never seen an adaptation of A Study in Scarlet before, so do it. And I love origin stories. So there you have it.
You could do other things in the summer. Cool. Tell us why you decided you wanted to direct this.
Well, I was talking to Bill, who I've known for a few years now, and this show was already planned to be going up, and I was already talking to him about maybe being in it or being attached, however, and I offered, hey, I'll assistant direct or direct or whatever, and he was fully supportive of me directing the show, and so, yeah, ever since then, we've been working on getting it together with these fantastic actors.
And Matt, what drew you to try out for Sherlock?
Well, I've been out of the theater scene for a little bit, and I was looking to come back since I got a first shift position again. And Bill had told me that he had this play about Sherlock Holmes in the works, and it intrigued me a lot, and he kept me in the loop. And I auditioned for a couple of parts, and I was really hoping for Sherlock to try and stretch my wings a bit. And when I got the call that I got the part of Sherlock, I was over the moon. So to play the world's greatest detective, it's really a dream come true.
Is this called a traditional take on this show? Are you playing it as Victorian London?
Yeah, it's totally, without giving too much away, we do move location at one point in the show, but it is grounded in the past, very traditional, taken right from the books story in London, yeah.
What did you bring to the role of Sherlock that surprised you? What could you do with Sherlock that you hadn't expected that you could?
I guess I would say the eccentricity of Sherlock Holmes and also a lot of the explanations and scientific dialogue that he uses, especially when explaining how he manages to piece together and all the little bits of deduction that he does. It's a lot to remember, but it's well worth it.
In that regard, was it challenging to decide what to leave in for the stage version and what to leave out to make sure that the audience got the gist of the story?
Oh, yeah. Translating it from one medium to another. That's a real trick of it, because there are certain things in the book that I felt probably would not have played as well on stage, while there are other things that I feel like really to capture the personalities of the characters, Dr. Watson being that sort of conduit with the reader or audience, as it were, the surrogate, if you will, and the eccentricities and so forth of Sherlock Holmes. It's a very verbose role, you have to admit, because he's got a lot of dialogue explaining all the tricks of the trade and stuff like that, a lot of fan service going on there. Nowadays, what would have been more introductory information back then. And I think that from an acting standpoint, Matt Bubble really does personify the character. It's really the most energetic I've ever seen him on stage, and it's exciting to watch because he really, like a moth to a flame, came right to the role, and out of the jump, I feel like had some idea where he wanted to go with it. And when you find actors who show up with that idea or have that background and understand what they're going for and know what they want out of it, sometimes all you have to do is just sit back and watch them play. And he doesn't get a lot of notes because I think he's got it all figured out.
What do you think, Cole, and how do you describe Watson as opposed to what we've just heard about?
Well, it's really interesting. What I love about this show in being an origin story is that you get to, and we really play with this a lot, about showing the growth of Holmes and Watson's relationship over the course of the show. So at the beginning, they're strangers, and you slowly see that rapport build. And, you know, by the end, you see that they are now the dynamic duo that you know them to be. And AJ, who plays Watson, is doing such a great job at capturing that sort of alien nature, that sort of like not quite understanding what's going on, but still being inspired to learn more and sort of building off of Matt Sherlock. It's just great to see.
Is there a sense of tension, and how are you as Sherlock winning him over, not just with your rational explanations, but with your personality? How do you make that happen as a character?
Well, when Sherlock meets Watson for the first time, he doesn't know, well, he can deduce much about him just by looking at him, of course, but aside from that deduction, he doesn't know exactly who he is. So Sherlock's also feeling out this relationship as well when they decide to share rooms on Baker Street for the first time. So Sherlock's feeling him out and trying to impress Watson with his cleverness, with his deductions, and sometimes winning him over, but sometimes Watson's like, okay, I don't really quite buy this. How would you do this then? So it's a very interesting start to a great dynamic relationship. And as time goes by throughout the play, we start to really get into that dynamic really well.
What's going to be so intriguing for the audience is to watch that dynamic play mm-hmm. out. But is there a mystery that is being solved in the course of the story in addition to
oh,
the
yeah.
dynamic?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The core of the story is really there's a dead body that's been found in an empty house. And Scotland Yard and their infinite wisdom are baffled, as always, by how this dead body got there. So one of the detectives writes a letter, sends it to Sherlock Holmes, and begs him to come and help us solve this incredibly impossible case. And that's really what draws not just Sherlock Holmes into what is an everyday experience for him, but for what is a brand new experience for Dr. Watson being pulled in. And I think a really important part of why Holmes invites Watson along is that in the early stages of figuring out who this guy is, there might be some element of, we'll put him to the test and see if he can really be my roommate. But also, he's useful in the sense that he's a doctor. He's probably been around a few dead bodies, so why not see if he can tell me something that I don't know? I think that's like the linchpin of beginning their relationship, not just say, hey, want to go have Zee on a room? It's, hey, want to come see a dead body? Why, of course I do. Yes, let's do this. And it just snowballs from there. And I think the actors are doing a great job. I think that their personalities, their dynamics are meshing very well. And
what about other characters? Are there other characters in this?
Oh, yeah, there are tons of other characters in this. Because you have Sherlock Holmes and John Watson, and you have Gregson and Lestrade, who, if you're familiar with Holmes media, you know them. But there's also plenty of characters that you meet at, you know, the boarding house and the other cops. And without giving too much away, it's a three-act show, which is a little bit out of the norm for theater these days. And act three, like, I think if you go in blind to this story, act three will, it literally and figuratively, take you places you will absolutely not expect, with characters where it'll blow your mind. There's so much rich history and so many great characters to meet in act three especially.
Do you use music to create an atmosphere?
Oh, absolutely we do. Oh, yeah. I'm playing with exactly what instrumental music we're using. A big thing, if you go on Facebook, we have a teaser out for the show. And if you look at that, you get a sense of how the music works to set the atmosphere of that. Like, that's totally kind of the vibe we go for in the show. And there's also, of course, the playlist that we play before the show and between intermission. And that's a lot of fun because you can do whatever songs you want. And you can also kind of hint towards what you're doing in the show there, too.
I just have to say, like, the fun thing about Cole being part of the production team on this is that it's literally like watching somebody putting a puzzle together and just getting a little bit of excitement out of every single piece that gets laid down. As far as music is concerned, he's playing a little close to the vest, throwing out tiny hints and things like that. But like you can see the giddiness in his eyes when we ask him about, well, what kind of music? And, oh, wait, you wait and see. I've got lists. So like it's fun to watch him do that. And it's fun to watch somebody else pick apart a story that you've done before and maybe find things in there that you might have missed the first time around. Like it's a real joy to watch somebody who's not you put that together, because now you find yourself sitting back going, oh yeah, why didn't I think of that? And I have said that a few times, like I wish I had thought of that when it comes to some of the stuff that he's doing on stage. So it's a lot of fun to get to see that dynamic and really see the story blossom from there.
Cole, as director, is it useful to have the playwright alive and on hand?
Yeah. Generally, it's great to have Bill. And an aspect with both Bill and with Matt and a lot of the other actors is I've actually not a huge Sherlock Holmes guy. If I had known a year ago that I was doing this, I would have read all of it, you know, and become an expert on Sherlock Holmes. But I've only had a few months, so I've become an expert on this story. And I've kind of relied on Bill and Matt and all the other experts in the cast to be able to fill me in on certain little things about, like, oh, okay, so that's that. And that's a great resource to have. Like, we had a whole conversation, Bill and I, and it's been an ongoing conversation throughout the show about using Holmes's deerstalker, his iconic hat, if and how it's used in the show. I don't want to completely spoil it, but I will say that it is implemented in one way or another, but you'll have to see the show to find out exactly. But yeah. So if we have any deerstalker fans, they might appreciate that.
What about your physical demeanor, the way you walk, the way you hold your pipe? Do you have a pipe?
I do have a pipe, yes.
In addition to the way you say your lines, and the hat aside, how do you feel like you're embodying Sherlock?
Well, aside from, obviously, the costume and the dialogue and trying to feel my way around it, I have been told previously that I am slightly a bit eccentric in some ways. So the one thing about Sherlock Holmes is that he can be a very imposing force. So I would have to stand very tall and to be very sure and assertive of myself and to not be at all doubtful in any way, shape, or form. Even if Sherlock is ever proven wrong, he never doubts himself. He always believes that what he's doing and what he deduces through his techniques is 100% correct.
Did you go read the original story?
I did. I actually have a complete one-volume set of all the Sherlock Holmes canon, so I did go back and I did reread just to get a few hints about what Sherlock Holmes does in this scene that might not be in the script and if I want to include that into the production. And of course, I go off Cole and Bill's notes, so if they like what I did with that, it's like, yes, it's from the book, I got it right.
And what about the rhythm and building the suspense in a mystery, just in general? But we know there are double arcs here because you have the dynamism between Sherlock Holmes and Watson, but you also have let's solve this mystery as a director.
Oh, yeah. Especially Act 2 of the show takes place pretty much entirely at 221B Baker Street, which is where they live. And it's literally just a pressure cooker of an act in terms of building up the suspense and to reveal about the mystery. So we've worked quite a lot on especially in that act of going, okay, we have to speed things up here, slow them down here, keep the audience on their toes, keep them entertained and fascinated just as much as you would be reading the original story, which is the hard part when you're adapting prose to stage, I think, especially with something like that.
Piggybacking off of Paul's last comment about the challenge of adapting is absolutely correct, knowing what to put in, what not to put in. But the other element is that in Act 2, really, that's a great way to describe it, as a pressure cooker. It really is, because you have such a combination of random personalities, from arrogance to humility to expertise to showboating and even a little bit of feeling unsure of oneself here and there, depending on who we're talking about. And to watch all those dynamics not get swallowed up by each other, especially considering the fact that, you know, we've got an incredible group of local actors and artists, very talented people working on fleshing out these characters, from Matt himself and AJ, who are playing the dynamic duo, to Adam Randis is playing Lestrade, and he came back from the previous production to reprise his role as Lestrade. And I'm saying Lestrade, we pronounce it Lestrade in this one. Then you have Dave Zimmerman, who is just, if there is a joke to be found, if there is some element of humor to be found that could enrich the story, Dave will zero in on it and he will use it. And that, I think, is incredibly vital, because without that break in humor, and that's really where I'm trying to go with this, without that break for humor every now and then, the tension gets wound so tightly that it almost becomes anxiety driving. So to have that little bit of a sense of relief in between is an important dynamic in a story like this too, because otherwise you have the manic behaviors of Sherlock Holmes being followed around by the what's going on now element of Watson just trying to navigate the tension. And then all the other elements that are going on, like just the fact that somebody had just been murdered and now there's a killer on the loose and all that crazy stuff that keeps you on the edge of your seat. So Act 2 especially, you get to see a lot of that comedic dynamic happen between the way the two detectives tell their own parts of the story. And it's a lot of fun to watch.
Matt, you said you're coming back after being away from the stage for a while. Are you getting back into the groove, like riding a bicycle? You don't forget?
In a way, yes. But also, this is my very first lead role. So I've mostly done supporting and background characters in the past. Very good ones, very prominent ones. But this is the first time I've ever carried a show, almost. So it's not a lot of pressure, but there's a bit of pressure. But it's good to be back on stage and to do something that's a lot more challenging than what I'm used to. And I'm really grateful for this opportunity.
Cole, tell us how we can match wits with Sherlock and Watson for this production.
Yeah, it's at the Pennsylvania Theater of Performing Arts at the Furrer Performing Arts Center on Broad Street in Hazleton. It's August 14th through 17th. That's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Thursday through Saturday, it's 7 o'clock, and then it's a matinee at 3 o'clock on Sunday. You can go to ptpashows.org to get your tickets, or you can go to Facebook, it'll take you there, or you can stop by the box office on the day. It's a little cheaper if you pre-order, so I'd go that route. But if you find yourself on the day and decide to go see some local theater, then I'm not going
to
stop you.
Anybody want to add something?
I would just like to say, as Sherlock Holmes always does, the game is afoot at the PTPA.
You heard it from Sherlock himself. The game is afoot at PTPA, the Pennsylvania Theater of Performing Arts on Broad Street in Hazleton in the Ferrara Center. And the production is Sherlock Holmes and the Scarlet Avenger. It's by Bill Amos, and he adapted the play from the story A Study in Scarlet. And we heard from Bill Amos, the playwright, and Matt Bubble, who is Sherlock Holmes in this production, and the director, Paul Hrufzowski. And they spoke with us in anticipation of opening on August 14th and running through the weekend then, August 14th, 15th, 16th at 7 in the evening, and then Sunday the 17th at 3 p.m., Sunday matinee at 3. That's August 14th through the 17th, with shows 14th, 15th, 16th at 7, and 17th at 3. For more information on the web, it's ptpashows.org, ptpashows.org.